Next thing is, I have another handout. By doing these now, I won't forget to do them later. These are from Senator Chen Oakland, issues identified by the Kupuna Caucus. Senator Chen Oakland would not be speaking today, so she left us instead with these issues. And actually, having them on a piece of paper may help you later, because we're going to ask you to give us, Kukua Council, your priorities. So here's a list of some things that the Kupuna Caucus has already recorded. Maybe if I can ask you to pass those out. Thank you. Laura's going to pass out those lists. And also, she's going to pass out a little bitty piece of paper to everybody. These are recycled hotel pads, another thing, you know, the kind you pick up if you're in a hotel room, little piece of paper. These are the official recycled Kukua Council answer sheets. What we'd like you to do is don't leave the meeting without putting down on that little piece of paper your two top priorities. Just list them, one and two. Plenty of space on the little piece of paper, and we save a tree. Now, the way it's going to work today is the program is divided into two parts. And the first part is there'll be a panel. Each person on the panel will speak for approximately 5 minutes. Over here, Dick Miller is the timekeeper. Most important person, keep your eye on Dick. He has an official high-quality stopwatch. And he will hold up a card. That's the stopwatch. This is a card. He's going to hold this thing up when you have a minute to go. And he has another one, 30 seconds to go. And we appreciate it if the speakers would try to keep to the time. Now again, the speakers, this panel is here to give us all information on issues that they're in charge of or is important to them or they're somehow involved in. And it's for you at the meeting to listen to them and decide what you think is most important to you and then let us know. Now after the panel, we're going to take some questions. And what I'll do is kind of arbitrarily, I know if I start questions, they could go on for a long, long time. So please forgive me, but at some point I'm going to say last question or something like that. There'll be another opportunity later. But what we have is a longer list of people, longer list of speakers, who will have 2 minutes each. Now, just because it's 2 minutes doesn't mean that these items are less important or that they're not going to be hot items at the coming legislature. For example, I see gambling is on the list. And from what I read in the newspapers, that is going to be a hot item this session. So even though it's only 2 minutes, please pay attention and give it equal consideration. It's just that we don't have 5 minutes for everyone. So you have to draw the line somewhere. And finally, after the each organization speaks, these are representatives of different organizations. We have, let me see if they're here. Senator Ryan, are you here?
No.
Ah, okay. And Representative Hanohano? We'll see you at the end. I'll call out the names again. Now, some people may not be here yet. Actually, she's on the speaker list. So, okay, we'll see how this goes. What I'd like to ask first is for the panel, I'll call out your names, please come and sit on this at this table here. And for state legislators, could you please say, you know, when you mention your name, say where you represent. So I'd like to ask to come up to the table in front of Representative Mizuno. Now for FACE, I think Bob Nakata is here. Thank you. If you could please come to the front. Alex Santiago from FOCUSED. Elizabeth Bethea from Elderly Affairs Division. I'm probably mispronouncing your name again. I did it right? That's amazing. Oh. Representative Marumoto. And from AARP, Steve Tam. I'm sorry the table's kind of so narrow, but please kind of squeeze in or spread out or something like that. And what I'll do is I'm going to give you the handheld mic so that you don't have to get up. And then when it comes to question times, we're recording this, so what I'd like to do is I'll bring the mic to whoever has a question.
And I'd like the answer, and this is not so great,
Sorry, I don't have any music to play during the technical adjustments, but okay, let me start. I'm going to pass the microphone. Might as well, I don't think we need to be in any particular order. Let me just start from the right side of the table. So put Bob on the spot, and you go first. Now, you got 5 minutes, and please, keep your eye on Dick over there.
Well, before I say anything else, Larry?
Yeah.
You were at our last meeting when you folks officially joined faith, so here's a certificate for that.
I didn't mention it because it's a little off the subject of today's important meeting, but yes, we joined faith. Kukua Council is a member of faith. As of last Thursday, we did our covenanting ceremony, and I think it's, I hope it's a marriage born in heaven, because we have two, what this represents is two strong advocacy organizations getting together to do what the people of Hawaii need. And I look forward to it. So thank you very much, Bob. Yeah. That doesn't come out of his 5 minutes.
It does not.
Yeah. I don't think I'll take the full 5 minutes. We're somewhat behind in our usual scheduling, so although we have areas of concern, we do not have specific items for the legislature yet. So I'll just mention those five areas. These are big areas, so we do what we call cutting of the issue a little later in our working agenda. So education has been identified as a top priority, or the top priority, but as you know, it's huge. And we have focused in on the Farrington complex of schools, and we will be doing training of parents for participation in that issue. Don't know what exactly will be coming out, but we hope to have parents trained to participate very strongly in the governance at the school and the programming at the school. We have already identified 20 to 25 parents for training. Healthcare is an area that we have been interested in for several years now, participated in healthcare reform. We are concerned about the RFP process that is going on right now for Medicaid. We're watching that very closely and what is also happening at the national level. Housing is something we have also been very strongly involved. The current area of involvement is around Mayor Wright housing and also the city affordable housing projects in mainly in the Chinatown area. Those are going to be put up for sale, the buildings, but not the land. The city will retain ownership of the land in order to still be a part of that process. Immigration is a statewide issue that we have also been involved with, and transit-oriented development is a fifth issue of concern. A couple of us went to Washington for a conference on what is called rail pollution, taking a closer look at what is happening nationally in terms of transit-oriented development. And then the last area of concern for us is the whole area of jobs. Local 5 is a member of FACE, and they are driving that part of our agenda. Concern about the ownership of a fair number of hotels in Waikiki by major firms on Wall Street. So those are the 5 areas of interest. And just announcement, on the 5th of November, we are having what we call an equity summit at the university discussing all of these issues. I'll be done. And then the other item is interfaith worship service at St. Augustine's Church in Waikiki on the 7th of November from 6:30 to 8 in connection with APEC. So you're invited to both of those. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Let me just pass the microphone down. Please say who you are and so forth.
Thank you, Larry. Good afternoon. Aloha. My name is John Mizuno from the Hawaii State Legislature. I chair the House Human Services Committee. I'm going to be talking about homelessness. And on any given day, our homeless population in the state will be around 5,800. It can hover close to 6,000 or more. Now, who are the homeless? They represent our children, our elderly, disabled, military veterans, mainland and non-citizens, immigrants and migrants. When we talk about migrants, mostly they are from the federated states of Micronesia, COFA migrants. And this number has risen. As Mark Alexander was at one of our briefings, he did indicate that the homeless population from the COFA migrant population is about 20 to 25%. So it is substantial. What are we doing to address these concerns? We're looking at plans to evolve a more effective system to reduce homelessness. First of all, let me say there's no silver bullet, and let me be extremely honest with you. We're always going to have homelessness. Okay. Why would a politician say that? I mean, usually politicians will say, you know, we're going to end homelessness. We're going to have zero homelessness. Trust us. Whenever you hear that, it's kind of dangerous. Let's be brutally honest with you. We're always going to have homelessness. But we can better manage it. Why would I say that? I'll tell you why. Number of factors which indicate we're always going to have homelessness. First, by choice. Some of us will want to be homeless. By choice. It's just how it is. Second, we have some of our people out there who may have a mental condition. We can take them to transitional housing, and after a couple minutes, they're just going to run off. We can't force them to be housed. Third, we have some of our members in society with a drug addiction. Again, they will be unable to follow the rules, and so they're not going to fit transitional housing or a homeless housing program. In addition to that, we have those that are duly diagnosed, mental illness and a drug addiction, to make matters more complicated. So there's always going to be a segment of homelessness in our population, but we're looking to better manage this, to reduce this, to address it, and we're not doing a great job. We can do a lot better. Okay. I'll run through these real quickly, and then I'll turn it over to Representative Malamoto. We did have a bill in the 2010 legislative session that we passed. This is Act 212 to address chronically homeless. These are the people I was mentioning earlier, the ones with a mental condition and a drug addiction. They're the hardest to deal with, because when we get them to transitional housing, what did I say earlier? They just run away. They are not good at following the rules. The problem with this is that we have funding, but it's called NIMBY, not my backyard. downtown Chinatown or Kalihi or Hawaii Kai. We just don't want it in our neighborhood. And so that's one of the problems, one of the major hurdles that we're trying to address. Second, safe zones. Can we find a safe zone for our homeless? Perhaps transitional housing, expand Kakaako Transitional Housing Center. That's what we need to do, expand, provide a safe zone for our homeless. Next, more affordable rental units. Some of these things are quite obvious to all of us, but the simple fact remains we don't have enough affordable rental units. That's also causing the plight of our homeless. Family reunification. You saw many times we'll have a family and they're originally from the mainland. They want to go home. I don't mind bringing them home because they're going to be reducing homelessness in Hawaii. They're going to be reducing the cost of our finite resources for homeless, and they're going to have a home. They're going to be reunified with the family on the mainland. Next, we have to work on more mental health and general health services and employment training. If we can do this, we can successfully transition many of our homeless to transitional housing, eventually getting their own home. And finally, this is the key, better coordination. Not more money, not more taxes, better coordination with the local, state, federal, and private nonprofits dealing with homelessness. We can do that. We can better address homelessness in our state. Thank you very much. Mahalo.
Good afternoon. My name is Barbara Marumoto. I'm in the House of Representatives from the Kaimuki, Kahala, Wailai area, from 6th Avenue through 20th, part of Kahala, Diamond Head, Wailai Nui Valley Ridge, and to Wailai Iki. My district will be changed drastically in the next election, so I'll lose all of Kaimuki, Kahala, and I will pick up Ainahaina, New Valley, Kuleo'o, part of Waikai. So that's going to be lots of fun. I passed around my kind of outdated calendar. It's not totally outdated. There's two more months in the year. But I just want to show my credentials for being a kapuna. I have 8 grandchildren, of which there's 6 are pictured. One wasn't born yet, and the oldest one is 19, and he was away in college. So I like to advocate for seniors, but now that I'm one myself, I guess I'm advocating for myself. But I wanted to tell you today that I want to talk about the pension tax and my opposition to it, if I could find my notes. And Mr. Tam here is very familiar with my opposition. We're fighting shoulder to shoulder against it last time. Governor Abercrombie had advocated taxing pensions, state, county, business pensions, military government pensions, for incomes as low as $37,500. And excuse me, I thought that was really low, and I called it too cruel. He took issue with it, but unfortunately, it did not pass. The House changed the bill so that it would affect only persons with individuals with incomes over $100,000. The Senate didn't buy this along at all, and neither did the AARP. But apparently it's going to come up again next year, and along with a lot of other tax proposals to address our deficit. So I just want to let you know that no matter how big our deficit is, that this is one particular bill that I will oppose. We sponsored a briefing on Hawaii's debt crisis recently, and the news was worse than we expected. That's because we found out many figures in the budget and the financial area are not reported. So we don't get a real good picture of our financial situation. I think this will be changed shortly. For instance, the state has an annual audit report, and it lists a liability of almost $1 billion for the state retirement system for unrelated compensation. And we found out the actual liability is closer to $9 billion. The state employee health system lists no liabilities, but this Institute for Truth in Accounting estimates our debt for the health fund at $5.1 billion. The total unfunded pension liability plus the EUTF health cost amounts to a staggering $22 billion or $25,000 for each man, woman, child in Hawaii. Yesterday's advertiser, there was an op-ed, Colbert Matsumoto reported that the ERS unfunded liability is $7.1 billion and the EUTF was underfunded by $14.7 billion in 2009. Whatever the difference, it spells a big headache for Hawaii's taxpayers. The Director of Budget and Finance, Calbert Young, said the state hopes to issue bonds for construction projects, but he hasn't been able to do this yet because the audit for 2010 has not been done. I hope it's been done since this talk. In addition to the debt crisis that burdens each person in the state, with $25,000 of debt per person, our budget is facing a $1 billion shortfall. So I just want to let you know, despite all our problems, well, I am going to fight the pension tax and as many other taxes as possible that impact our seniors. Thank you.
Thanks, Representative. I'm Steve Tam from AARP Hawaii, and I'm the Director of Advocacy. I'm relatively new there, so for those that I haven't met, I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you later. Today, what I want to talk about is really some of the key priorities that we are going to be looking at in 2012. But before I do that, I wanted to kind of give a backdrop in terms of why we think they're so important. And I think it starts with, you know, as you all know, the that silver tsunami that we talk about, you know, that tsunami that, you know, travels under the water and unknown to most people until it hits the shore. And it's to the point now where it's at the shore and, you know, we see the immenseness of that wave. And so that's the challenge that we face now. And, you know, some of the specific things that we're talking about is that the aging population is one where, you know, the baby boomers that a lot of us are here today, that 46 to 1964 age group, is reaching retirement now. And the 65 plus population is projected to grow by 78% in the next 20 years. 78% in the next 20 years. And that means that more than one out of five, or about 22% of Hawaii residents will be age 65 by the year 2030. The 85 plus population, which is the population most likely to need long-term care, you know, they are going to grow approximately 65% over the next 20 years. Now, the thing is that the seniors, you know, really have been supported by caregivers. Now, the caregivers are typically people that are the typical person that you hear about is a 49-year-old woman who is caring for her mother, spending about, on average, 20 hours a week. And this will typically occur for about 5 years. Now, over the next 20 years, this age group for caregivers, the 50 to 64 age group, is expected to decline. Is expected to decline by about 10%. So, you know, we're faced with a rapidly increasing population that's aging, and then coupled with the fact that the caregiver population is declining by about 10% during that same period of time. So that's really the crux of the issue. You know, AARP just did and released a long-term care and caregiver study in 2011. And what it said is that 78% said that they would like to receive long-term care services at home, and about 94% said that it's important that they receive these services so that they can stay at home as long as possible. The thing is that the number of caregivers that we're talking about is approximately 247,000 caregivers throughout the year in the 2011 timeframe. You know, at one point in time, someone was a caregiver, whether it be, you know, a grandchild, a son, you know, a friend was a caregiver. So 247,000. And they gave approximately 162 million hours of unpaid care. If you pencil that out, that comes out to about $2 billion of economic value of unpaid free care that's provided, you know, to loved ones. But anyway, as a backdrop, because I'm running short of time, is that really the things that we're going to be keying in on is expansion of Kupuna Care and also being able to get that funded on a long-term permanent basis as well too. We have the Long-Term Care Commission, which is also going to be submitting its report this year. Pension taxes, we're going to be watching what's happening with pension taxes, because as you know, that was one of the key things that we looked at in the past legislative session. Also, healthcare benefit formulas, you know, might be coming up again. And so we're going to be watching that as well too. In terms of the Affordable Care Act as it relates to Hawaii, you know, things to be on the lookout for that we're going to be watching is to really look at the Hawaii Health Insurance Exchange and also the First Medical Home as well to help out seniors in terms of from a medical standpoint. And then lastly, on a home and community standpoint, complete streets ordinance we're looking at, and also transit-oriented development and Home for Life Task Force. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Aloha, my name is Elizabeth Bethay. I'm the Division Chief for the Elderly Affairs Division at the City and County. We are, our initial mandate was to serve people age 60 and over regardless of income. In the past few years, the Older Americans Act of 1965 has been amended, requiring the area agencies on aging, of which we're one, to serve not only people age 60 and above, but also people of any age with any kind of disability and caregivers. And so we have, our mandate has more than quadrupled. If you look at the number of people just on Oahu, you know, we went from a slice of about 21% of the population to somewhere around 80% of the population being our potential service population. In many ways, this is an unfunded mandate. The Administration on Aging was very clear that when they started this Aging and Disability Resource Center Initiative, ADRC, that they were giving more or less startup money to the states to get them to establish aging and disability resource centers in the area agencies on aging. And Kupuna Care has helped with that and the state's funding for the ADRC. However, the city, the counties are expected to support a fair amount of the ADRC. And the other three counties in the state, the portion of county contribution to the ADRC is anywhere from 42% to 56% of those area agencies on aging's budget. In Honolulu, the county contribution to our program is 8% of our budget, and yet we have over 70% of the state's population. And so it's a real problem for us to serve not only the Kupuna, but to try to gear up to serve people of any age with any kind of disability. We're gerontologists and we don't really have that background. So the ADRC, I think, needs to be supported at the state level even more than it has been. One of the areas that is our mandate and yet we have not been able to serve is the older and disabled homeless population. This is a population that is a very high priority for us. We would like to be able to serve them, but we don't have staff and we don't have the resources to be able to do the outreach. One of the things I think in terms of the legislative agenda would be having the state develop foster family homes and arches for people, for older people, people with disabilities who also have major mental illness, and to give incentives for people to open homes such as these, because it would require, you know, daily monitoring of medication. But we have so many people, so many kupuna, and so many people with disabilities living on the streets because of a major mental illness, and so many of these illnesses are very treatable. If you look at Alzheimer's, the effect of Alzheimer's on the brain, and the effect of schizophrenia on the brain, it's very close. Both of those diseases are actually eat away brain tissue. And so I think that we need to put more money toward mental health, providing medication and psychiatric monitoring so that people can return to being productive citizens, you know, be able to get into the workforce and have a shot at a life, and Representative Mizuno, that would help get people off the street. So, thank you.
Aloha.
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 Aloha. Aloha. Come on, everybody, wake up. I know when I go last, I gotta wake you up. Hi, I'm Alex Santiago. I'm the executive director of FOCUSED, and for those of you who may not know, FOCUSED is spelled with a PH, stands for Protecting Hawaii's Ohana, Children, Underserved, Elderly, and Disabled. Now, FOCUSED is an advocacy voice for the health and human services sector, and I'm going to go over basically three topics today. First is our work in the areas of coalition meetings that we've held over the last few months. The other is in a collective impact project that we just started, and I see some people here today that was just in a meeting earlier. We also have our legislative agenda. Now, our legislative agenda stays away from specific legislation because as an organization as large as ours, you can imagine there are so many of my member agencies that would like us to weigh in on all of these specific issues. We are going to take a much larger perspective and look at the economic issues as it impacts on the entire sector. We have a policy committee chair, former director of Department of Human Services, Susan Chandler, who's also looking at specific economic issues that will be driving this legislative session. In the past, we have come out in opposition to any form of gambling, any form of legalizing gambling in the state, because it's a hot issue, and I heard someone's going to be speaking about it later. We've already are prepared to again come out in opposition to that. We do not believe that that's going to be the silver bullet to fix anything. Regarding our coalition meetings, just to let you know, we know that the economic crisis that hit us is very real. And I share with you, 22 years ago, I first got elected. I was even younger than John is right now. And by the way, on this panel, there are two present legislators and two former legislators. And I got to share with you, back in 1990, when I first got elected, we were going through an economic crisis back then. And over the last 22 years, I can't remember a single time when we were going through a session where people weren't talking about the crisis we're facing with funding. We can't fund this, we can't fund that, and it's just been going on and on. But the one thing that is for sure is I have never seen in my 22 plus years of watching this legislative process a time when the health and human services and the care for those who are least able to care for themselves was at the point it is today. It is at a point right now where it's so very real that what we're trying to do is say, okay, if they can't find the necessary funds, is there a way that the sector itself can look within ourselves and figure out how we can do more? We've always talked, do more with less. We've collaborated, we've consolidated, we've done all of this. Well, the latest thing we're working on is like a railroad track with two different rails going down. On the one left-hand rail, I've convened five different coalition meetings. The coalitions we've convened were the developmentally disabled, the domestic violence coalitions, the substance abuse coalitions, the Youth Network Coalitions, the Adult Mental Health Coalitions. We've offered other coalitions to participate. What we have done is through those coalition efforts identify the top issues that the ledge and the administration needs to be aware of. We've offered up some suggestions on policy issues they can implement that does not call for increased funding. And the last thing we did, which is probably the most important, is we've identified the potential train wrecks that will occur if nothing is done. On the other train track, if I can call it that, is a collective impact project that we started. Collective impact is being done all over the nation. There's a model called STRIVE, S-T-R-I-V-E. We brought in a trainer from the mainland just this morning who went over with us the preliminary meeting. Tomorrow, all day, we're holding a collective impact project training, and we've identified five different work groups. Some of you in this room are on those work groups. Kupuna is one work group. The working poor is another. 1 minute left. Early childhood is another, homelessness is another, and at-risk youth. What we are going to do with the collective impact is look at ways that we can actually, through the synergy of working together, come up with an identifiable goal and a report card that we work towards to achieve those attainable goals to make this a better place. And the last thing I guess I'll say is that our legislative issues have yet to be determined. We're working on it right now, so if there are issues that you guys want us to consider, please feel free to come up in my 30 seconds. So, thank you.
Thanks, everybody. I'd like to open it up to questions now while the panel is still in the front. And again, I apologize, but I'll have to cut off questions at some arbitrary point so that we can continue on with our program. But now's your chance. And I only have one microphone, so bear with me. I want to get the microphone to you, and you ask your question and get it back to the panel for the answer. Okay? Who has a question?
Well, this is one of the most depressing panels I've ever heard, but it's obvious that there has to be more revenue. I'd like to hear from each one of you your ideas and what you think would be a good way for revenue enhancement and what the source of the revenue would be from. This newspaper article, the headline reads, Medicare Swindlers Appeal Then Persist. And you know, Medicare is a big problem as far as funding. It's a boon for many of us, and you know, I just had a cataract surgery, so that was really great. But apparently, people are swindling. There's a lot of providers that don't provide the service, and then they say they do, and they take the money and they run. And so, what happens is that there's a contracted group that goes out and finds these swindlers, and they report it to Medicare. But then there's no follow-up. There's another group that's supposed to follow up, but then there's Medicare doesn't inform them. So these people just go ahead and apply for another contract with Medicare, and they just keep going and going and going, and they're not getting caught. So I know, you know, we know some people who have been, but here's one way that we could really get some more money. I don't think gambling is the answer, even if we institute it. When do we see profits? You know, 3-4 years from now? Maybe too late.
Yeah, I agree. Gambling's just going to lead towards more problems. But I got to say, I mean, in specifically answering your question, we are looking at progressive ways of taxing those who have the most, who can pay more. As a result, now every time we bring it up, the legislature points out, well, we just did that. We just increased income tax on the wealthy, and we can't do it anymore. If you do anymore, they're all going to move away, and they're not going to pay their taxes anywhere. You're not going to gain as much, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We are engaged in, actually, Bob is working with one of our press people, and our policy person is looking at different forms of, you know, let's face it, in my opinion, we need the revenue. It's not going to come back. At the same time, how do you implement it? And the task for these guys is, how do you do it without hurting the economy that's trying to recover, etc.? It's a tough job, I know. But at some point in time, we're going to have the courage to acknowledge that if we're going to care for the people who need the care at the level that they need it, we're going to have to find those revenues. Our position has been kind of waffling on the 4% general excise tax. That's been a really difficult one. Everyone knows that. I'm not sure if even that's the answer. But I can say that should revenue-enhancing ideas come up, focus will probably be forefront in supporting some of the ideas. The soda tax we did support last year. We're going to support it again this year. Let's face it again. The reality is we have never faced an economic crisis like we're in right now. And I don't think we can just hunker down and wait for it to go away. And just in response, I've been in this field for many years. And I can say that fraud is one area that people have pointed to as the problem. But in reality, our state has led the nation in many areas in having the lowest level of fraud. And at the same time, we don't want to hurt the very people who need it by becoming overly punitive in that area. So I agree that there needs to be some oversight, but I don't think that that's going to be the silver bullet that's going to solve it.
You know, I'm remembering recently when the governor said to the feds, pay up for COFA. You know, we can't, this, our economy is in the tank. We need to, we need support to, for the COFA, Compact of Free Association for Micronesia. So, you know, I would say, let's say to the feds, pay up for the ADRC mandate, pay up for Americans with Disabilities Act, that kind of thing, so that we hold the feds accountable for these mandates and make them pay their part, where I feel that this state is shouldering way too much, every year the funding stays flat or goes down just as our service population goes up. So I would like to see that happen more.
I think from an ARP standpoint, it's something where if there's revenues, it has to be on a progressive basis and not really on a regressive basis, meaning that, you know, historically when people talk about general excise taxes, you know, that's typically your case where it is a regressive tax. Now, the thing is that looking at a tax, for example, like the pension tax, the reason that we were in opposition to it the last session was because of the fact that it focused primarily on one group of people, versus if there was something that was more broad-based, you know, that's really what we're looking for, a fairness issue there. To move to another revenue stream that is really something to look at is that the Affordable Care Act also has potential for additional grants, and it's something where the administration can take a look at that to be able to get grants from the Affordable Care Act, things called Balancing Incentive Payments Program, money following the person, things like that. There are monies that can be applied for. And so it's additional sources of monies.
I just like to piggyback on what Steve said. One of the problems with some of these grants is that they're very short term. They will be for 2 to 3 years, and they're intended as startup. And at the end of that grant period, the grantee is expected to provide the resources to make that program sustainable. And so, most of these programs are these short-term grants. And one of the things that happens is if you develop a much higher level of programming because of grants, and then in 2 or 3 years that funding is gone and you're not able, your organization or government is not able to step up and provide the resources to sustain the program at that level, then the service level is going to fall off, and yet you've created dependency and expectation in the community. And so, you know, I think that that's a grave disservice that we do to people who need those services the most. So I think we also have to be wary of those grants.
Good point. And I guess the thing is that the reason for those grants, too, was to provide incentives to be able to move, especially like Medicaid type of funding, from institutional care to HCBS, because that's where it is that most people want to be, and because of the fact that approximately that same dollar can help out three people on an HCBS basis versus on an institutional basis. But good point.
I've got to just point out that I believe more in a progressive tax than a regressive tax, and I consider the general excise tax very regressive, because most of the poor spend most of their income on rent, which is GET taxed, food, medical expenses. So it really impacts on the older person, the sicker person, and the poorer person. So that would be my number one no vote, really. I'm open to other votes, but again, taxing the rich, you remember that we have the highest income tax rate in the country. A lot of states don't have any. Two of my closest friends just are planning to move to Nevada, where there's no income tax. California has a tax on wealthy people, but it's lower than ours. It's under 11%, and ours is 11%. Theirs doesn't kick in until $1 million, and ours kicks in at $100,000. So we will see movement on the part of our wealthier people.
I have been an advocate of the GET. I'm probably backing off at this point. My reasoning has generally been the impact of the GET can be mitigated by tax credits for different kinds of things. And a lot of those credits have been reduced over time. But, well, let me put it this way. What I've said is the GET is regressive. There's no question about that. But where else do we go? Kind of revenue that it generates is huge. Offset it with credits, but also look at it from this standpoint. The programs that we value the most are the ones that will be cut if the revenue is not there. Which is more regressive? I think that needs to be looked at seriously. A progressive tax at the state level, tax experts keep telling me that doesn't make sense because rich people have multiple residences and they can choose where to pay their taxes. So if we raise it here, they'll go to another state. At this stage, we need to look back at history and we need to look at the federal level. We came out of the Depression and World War II with marginal tax rates above 90%, and those lasted into the 60s. Kennedy dropped them into around 70. That lasted till 1980. After 1980, they were cut in half to 35%. Federal tax revenue, income tax revenue, is now at historic lows. The lowest amount of federal income tax being collected since about 1951. Shouldn't we be looking there? And I know this is not a popular thing, but I think the Occupy Wall Street people are onto something. Federal revenue has dropped tremendously over the last 30 years. That is where we need to look. And I think the momentum is building to go back to rates that are in the 40% range. Remember that the Bush tax cuts were only 5%. Clinton got them up to about 40%. Bush dropped them to 35, got us into two wars. We need to look at those kinds of things seriously. We are the ones hurting in terms of pain. The people at the top end have been collecting hand over fist for the last 30 years and are still asking for more. This is not a position of face. I better be clear about that. I'd like to get face to that point. But if we don't look at that, we are looking at a situation where the disparity in income is as great as it's been almost in the nation's history. You have to go back to the days of the robber barons to have the income distribution that we have today. Not very popular, but I think it has to be done. We are letting the rich get away with murder.
Thank you. There's no pressure on me, right? From the legislature standpoint, first let me say I'm not speaking completely on behalf of the legislature. Everyone's going to do their vote. But let's be very realistic here, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, 2012 is an election year. And at the legislature, we kind of take a step back from taxes in an election year. I'm just being real, Pension tax, the Senate was completely against it, steadfast against it. We're bicameral, two houses. This is not Nebraska. You know the Senate's gonna do the same thing. So pension taxes will probably not pass in 2012, not pass. What about the GET? Probably not, probably not. A couple other taxes that I had in mind, we had a car rental fee tax that raised $60 million. It has a one-year sunset date. So it's, nevertheless, $60 million is a lot of money. I may seek to introduce that or have someone else introduce it. Remove the sunset date and have it for one more year, $60 million. You heard talk about the soda tax. Now, if you're just taxing beverage containers at a nickel a piece, that's going to raise the state between $50 and $60 million. Still substantial. Is it realistic? It's going to be very difficult. It was heard in the Senate last year, and Senator Green couldn't pass it out of his committee, the Health Committee. So it's something that you can look at, but realistically, is it going to pass? Probably not. Cigarette tax. I'd like to introduce another increase in the cigarette tax. Maybe a penny for every cigarette. I'm going to try. We would love to raise between $15 and $20 million. Is that going to pass? Very difficult. So all these taxes, all these ideas, we'll take a look at in the 2012 legislative session. But let me be very clear and real to all of you. It's going to be very tough to pass any taxes. Again, because it's an election year, we can take a look at it, but usually the legislature gets a little cool when it comes to election year and taxes. But Reverend Nakata, you have great ideas, and I think they're very progressive, so thank you very much.
Thanks, everybody. Well, that was a good question that Laura asked, and I think we gave it time to hear some really good answers. So I'm going to have to cut it here. I hope our panelists could stay and participate in answers at the end of the session. But that was a darn good question. I guess we need to hear about it. It sounds to me like we're doomed. I mean, expenses going up. Goldman Sachs is selling default swaps against us. Pensions are going up, and we're not going to raise any revenue. Why don't you guys think about this again before the question session at the end and see if we can find a way to save the state. Okay, we're going into our next phase. Let's have a round of applause for the panel. Darn good job. Thank you, each of you. What we're going to do, first of all, let me just take a moment to explain. Kukua Council is going to take your answers from these little pieces of paper, and we're going to sort through them, and over the next month or two, we have our retreat in December when there is no general meeting. We're going to formulate how Kukua Council supports each item in the next legislative session. Some of those, which come out at the top, we will advocate strongly. Others we will support, and others will probably just submit testimony because resources are limited. We can't support every bill that you may suggest, but this is why we need to know from you one of the most important bills. So today is the day for you to provide the input for us to do the work during the coming legislative session. Now what I'm going to do is call three names in a row and ask the next two to be ready so that we'll be efficient to you. You get 2 minutes. Hang on a sec. Okay. And if somebody's not here, obviously you won't come up, but I'm assuming, I'm just going to go down the list of people who have reserved the time. I'm going to ask you to use this microphone, and Dick will let you know when your minute and 30 seconds are up. So the first three names I'd like to call, the first will be Senator Ryan, or Representative, no? Oh, okay. Representative Hanohano, John McDermott. Anybody here? John. Well, okay, next will be Judy Schick and Ann Fried. Get ready.
Okay. Aloha, everybody. Mine is not really a legislative proposal, it's just kind of an update. So you know that in the past we've talked about trying to get unannounced inspections of our long-term care facilities, and also to get...
It's just one.
Oh, okay. And also to get the inspections online. And so again, this is what a survey looks like. This is Hali Nani's, and it has two sides. One side is actually what was found wrong, the deficiencies, and the other side is the plan of correction. And this is also on a website called Nursing Home Compare. So anybody anywhere in the United States can look up the results of any nursing home and find out what the problems were and what the plan of correction is. We don't have this for care homes. We don't have this for assisted living facilities. We don't have this for the community care family foster homes. And so what we've been working on with the Department of Health and Department of Human Services and the Governor's Office is to see how we can tweak the survey process that we've been working on, and also to have that information online. There's 27 states right now that do have that kind of information online. Hawaii's not one of them, but we're working on that. So just wanted to let you know that we're not proposing any legislation because we're working in-house with the Governor's Office, and hopefully we'll make some progress. Thank you.
I'm Judy Schick, and I'm chair of PAPIA. We have three issues, and they're all, we're supporting EOA, the Executive Office on Aging, with our issues. Actually, we have more than three issues, but our top three priorities that we were asked to talk about. Then I took a look at the sheet that, of Kapuna Caucus, and I noticed that the second, third, and fourth issues on that sheet match exactly what I have on my list. And so let me tell you that my issues, one of the reasons that we're really supporting them is they did not, we could not get them, or EOA could not get them as part of the administrative budget, because there again, there's no sources of funding. So let's talk about Kapuna Care, that is our top issue, trying to get the monies into the base budget so that every year we're not going to the legislature to try to get additional funding. So that would be our top priority. Then the ADRC, I've got to speed this up. So funding again didn't come through for ADRC, and we have a mandate that we have 2.5 years instead of 5 years to get all the different counties up and running. And our third issue is healthy aging, and that's for our Kapuna, to make sure that we can continue with the athletic wellness, exercise programs for our Kapuna. So we ask for support in all the issues, and thank you very much. It's 2 minutes.
Okay, let's see. We have Ann Fried? No? Okay. Moving on. Next is Rose Nakamura. or someone from Project Dana, and Jeannie Ota from Joe Paulson Forum, and followed by Grace Furukawa.
Nakamura, the administrator for Project Dana. We have been in service for over 22 years, and we are a volunteer caregivers program that helps the frail, elderly, and disabled, and persons and family caregivers. I strongly support state funding for Kupuna Care, because we see on a day-to-day basis the urgent need for compassionate care to those who can live, and help them live as independently in the homes. And that's our program, in that we do action, community-based and service programs. So that's what I would like to speak strongly for. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Jeannie Ota. I'm Executive Director of the Drug Policy Forum. It was really great. We got into that discussion about where is the revenue coming from. Well, let's talk about where money has been spent and perhaps not being used efficiently. And on the war on drugs. It's a continuing war. We don't have an exit strategy. Would it surprise you to know that in the last 40 years of the war on drugs, since President Nixon declared that war, the United States has spent $1 trillion taxpayer dollars on that war that is largely a failure? So where do we go from here? Our proposal, we have three basic legislative priorities. One is to decriminalize the adult personal possession of less than 1 ounce of marijuana by replacing the current criminal penalty, which is a petty misdemeanor, with a civil fine. Now, you might say, why would you do that? Well, the criminal penalty, even if it is a petty misdemeanor, still leaves that person with a criminal background, right? You get a record, which is more harmful to that person than the effects of the drug itself. And also, we would save money by not prosecuting these people and let them off with a fine in the first place. The second priority is on medical cannabis. Now, the problem here is that our government should not interfere with the healthcare choices of patients. They've already had come to the conclusion that cannabis will help them. Should the government stand in the way? So we have a variety of solutions there on the medical cannabis program, which Hawaii currently does have. Okay, thank you.
So Grace Furukawa, followed by Marilyn Seeley and Lynn Moku. Yeah, that's it.
2 minutes, huh? I believe everyone here knows where I stand with the Hawaii Coalition Against Legalized Gambling. And the coalition really means a whole series of organizations that agree that gambling would not be beneficial. In fact, when I think about it, this is the only law, if they passed a law for gambling, that would be willing to sacrifice 2 to 5% of their own population to addicted and problem gambling. Because once they open the gambling, the 3 to 15 miles around that particular area brings in gamblers, people, our citizens, who would not normally be gambling, but it's there. So they come in, and then the temptation continues. Now, this coming year is a leftover bills are still there, and there you know. Many, many legislators are itching to get at it because they feel the income would be so great. Our coalition is less about ethics on this issue than we are about money. We really have heard from person after person of our experts that we brought in say that for every dollar that we get in from gambling, $3 are going to go out in social costs eventually. Maybe not in, right in the beginning, but eventually we're really going to be hit on this. Lotteries are the poorest, hit the poorest, you know that. And believe it or not, gambling attracts the elderly and the adolescent the most of all the people, outside of the poor people who want to make $1 billion. That is really sad. And crime increases with any form of gambling, so you're going to have to pay for an increased police force. I won't go on with this. I think everybody knows it. And I hope that we have your support for watching out for these new old bills that are coming up again. Thank you.
Say who you're with.
I'm Marilyn Seeley, and I'm wearing my Center on Aging hat today. I'm representing Colette Brown and the Center on Aging. And we address two major PUCAs in supporting aging issues, and one is the research. And I think everybody knows we need more information. We simply don't know everything there is to know about some of these very complex issues. And it's evolving all the time. So we need a focus at the university that really deals with those major research issues. And the other one is the preparation of our workforce. I mean, you folks that are out there in the workforce, you know that it is hard to get people who are very well trained and skilled in all of the issues, the myriad of issues that you need to know to work in this field, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. I mean, it takes a lifetime to understand these, and then sometimes you don't even know that. So those are two major issues that we're dealing with at the university, and we're trying to develop and consolidate our research efforts by partnering with other people at the university. Nobody goes out and does it anymore on their own. So we have several proposals in with the medical school and the School of Nursing on various issues, primarily dealing with long-term care, prevention of falling, that sort of thing. We're also partnering with Wes at the Executive Office on Aging. That is a very long-standing partnership that we want to continue. And the other one, as far as education goes, we are looking at ways to enhance the current education system. There are many places in this country that offer certificates of gerontology and online at a very low rate. So we have to find out where our niche is in that, and that's a very important one. We also have an annual event at the school that encourages the students to move into the gerontology area. And we have a new, I'm going to say this, Dick, we have a new course on public policy and aging that will be in the Outreach College beginning this spring. And our only Tony Lenzer is going to be coordinating that along with Dr. Eldon Wegner. So go online if you're interested in that course. Thank you.
Lynn Mokel, followed by Bruce McCullough, and we're going to put in grandparents since we have some other cancellations.
Hi, my name is Lynn Mokel, and I'm the director of the Meals on Wheels program at Launa Kea Pacific. Launa Kea Meals on Wheels is the largest provider of meals for seniors on the island, providing both home-delivered meals and group dining meals for group at group dining facilities, our Kapuna Wellness Centers. At the Wellness Centers, we also provide socialization, educational programs, nutrition. So these two programs, home delivery and group dining meals, really allow our seniors to maintain more independence and live at home longer. For home delivery, they also provide a level of respite for our caregivers. Less than 60% of our funding comes from government, both state and federal funding, and the remaining funds come from individuals and corporations, foundations, but also from our Launa Kea kitchens. But in this economy, we've had a very hard time raising the money to just meet the current need. Over the past several months, that need has been increasing monthly, and for the first time in about a year and a half, we have a wait list of 40 people last month, and now this month we expect another 30 or 40 people, so that wait list is growing. More than 77,000 meals have been provided to seniors just within the last quarter, and if this trend increases, we are going to exceed 310,000 meals. That's 60,000 meals more than we expected or budgeted for. So we are asking for continued funding for Kapuna Care programs and for Lanakila Meals on Wheels. You can help end senior hunger by supporting these programs. So this is what we're asking you to do. Kapuna Care, please. Thank you.
Bruce McCullough for Hara. No, not here. Okay. We're going to add in one more speaker because we have some cancellations. So please, for grandparents raising grandchildren, you have, say who you are and explain just a moment out of your 2 minutes, please.
My name is Helen Wagner, and I'm an advocate for grandparents raising grandchildren. A lot of issues have come up regarding the grandparents raising grandchildren. We're now recognized by the federal government as caregivers. And we found that the grandparents, especially the ones that are doing it, quote, for free, they're limited in their pensions and different things that by doing this, it really affects them. Most of the grandparents now are taking out of their savings rather than putting into their savings like in the old days. And also we found that raising the grandchildren, we save the state for every foster care child to $529 per child per month. So we do play, especially here in Hawaii, a very vital part in keeping the system going. We want to present to the legislators for consideration that perhaps that the grandparents that are raising grandparents be given some kind of tax exemption, not just have to maybe you take it from the kids that are deadbeat and having these parents raise it, but it is money that should be considered that to help with this problem of growing in our society. Thank you.
Okay, we had another cancellation and another request. So Dick Miller would like to speak about the Prison Coalition. I will, we'll trust you to time yourself here.
I'm terribly sorry that Cat Brady is not here today, but I've been following her work for the last many months on prisons, and it turns out that we're spending millions and millions and billions of dollars too much to incarcerate too many people, for many of whom are not a threat to themselves or anyone else. There's a lot of scholarly work that's been done on this, and we're losing a fortune. And that is a source that we must look to in these circumstances today. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dick. Okay, this ends our speakers program. Oh, you're here. Come on.
Say who you are and what organization.
Colin Hayashida with Kapi'olani Community College's Kupuna Education Center. Just two things that I think that we'd like to have people think about. With the growth of the seniors, obviously, we're going to be depending more and more upon families to care for them, as was pointed out by Steve. But many of them are untrained, and so we need to pay some attention to the kinds of training that they receive. This is something that the college does, and there's other colleges and other places that do. I think we need to, this is a cost-effective way. One course, for example, the basic course that we have is 3 days, so it's a total of 6 hours, $15. $15, okay? And we have another one that is twice as long, and it's $30. So it's relatively inexpensive, and it's a great way to somehow help families help their loved ones. So that's one thing that I think that we may need to think more about down the road. The second one is with the cost of long-term care, we are people putting people in nursing homes, at about $10,000, you know, we're spending about $10,000 per person per month with Medicaid dollars. So we move them over into these small residential care homes, and they cost the state about maybe $4,000 per patient per month. Great savings, and it's been working quite well. But we haven't been paying much attention to training. So this is a whole area as far as continuing education that I think that may need to be looked at very seriously. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Okay, now, we're going to use our remaining time for questions. Yes?
You want to?
Yeah.
Okay.
One more. We aim to please.
Hi, thank you, Larry. Wes Lum with the Executive Office on Aging. I guess, you know, unfortunately, because we couldn't get a number of proposals included in the administration's budget, we would support the intent of the Aging and Disability Resource Centers. How many of you, I don't know, how many of you remember what you were doing in 1965? Because that's the year that our aging network and the way in which we deliver current home and community-based services were put together. It's that old. And we are revolutionizing it. We are transforming it through the Aging and Disability Resource Center. So that's one of the things that we're in support of, or support the intent of, I'm sorry. Kupuna Care, of course, is something that we are in complete support of, as well as the healthy aging. I ask you to consider the recommendations of the Long-Term Care Commission that will be making its recommendations in December, particularly as it relates to restructuring state government agencies as it relates to long-term supports and services to really end the fragmentation. And then, of course, you know, we are looking at right now state plans on Alzheimer's disease and related dementias, as well as a state plan on falls prevention. So we're not going to be able to come up with recommendations this year, but hopefully in the very near future, we'll have something to ask for your support with. So thank you.
Thank you. Okay, no more speakers. We need your input. Make sure, please, you have one of these little pieces of paper. If you need one, put your hand up and somehow it'll get to you, or come get one. And let's do this for the questions. You can ask a question of any of the panel members. I'll just bring you the microphone, and then we need to know who's going to give the answer. I'll bring the microphone to them. Now, you had your question, and it was a good one. Let me give someone else a chance first. We'll get to you.
The panel on the state of raising taxes said we're not going to do, you know, you're not going to go anywhere and you're not going to generate it there. So what about APEC money that's coming in here? There's a lot of money that's supposed to be coming in, and certainly if you're not going to do income revenue of that, look at the APEC money.
Okay, who would like to answer the APEC question?
Yes.
One of our legislators? Okay.
I'm hoping it would generate some income for our state. As you've been reading in the papers, the media, this is a great opportunity for Hawaii to showcase our talent and generate greater business with the economies in Asia. So it's very important. Regarding money to government, I don't think we're going to see substantial amount, but it's important to know that if we have greater business partners in Asia, it's going to generate overall money to our state. So that's very important. Tourism is our number one industry, over $10 billion annually, followed by military, $6 billion. APEC, we hope, will eventually provide more business in Hawaii. The concern I have is that this year we tried to pass bills to fund for security, and we couldn't even get that measure passed. That's how bad it was at the legislature. And an argument I had, I can say this, an argument I had with Mark Alexander, I don't mean any ill will to the gentleman, he's a very nice guy personally, but we had disagreements on APEC. This dealt with homelessness. The reason we had a disagreement is former Mayor Hanneman was there at one of our briefings, and he said this is a golden opportunity to work with businesses, partner state and county with businesses to reduce homelessness not only in Waikiki, but if it proves successful statewide. And Mark Alexander was against that. He said it doesn't matter that APEC is coming to Hawaii. We're going to deal with homelessness the same way. I was opposed to his comments because I said this is a golden opportunity to partner with public-private businesses to better address homelessness. That's just one example, but will it be a great windfall for the state? Only time will tell, and I think the focus will be on businesses and business partnerships with Asia for APEC. Sorry I wasn't able to answer completely your question.
Okay. Another question, please.
Jean Ota, I'd like to ask, you said three things and you didn't get to number three. Did I miss it? Sorry.
So the two things were based on the medical marijuana program. One is improving legal access for patients to marijuana, and the second one is to improve the current program. Thank you.
Thank you. I have another question for John Mizuno. There are successful programs in other places in the state that are taking care of the homeless. Are you aware of them, or are you trying to see what succeeds nationwide?
Yes.
For example, using bankrupt hotels that have been closed and opening them up for the homeless is one that I heard of. And there is a bankrupt hotel here in Makaha. Anyway.
Yeah, Laura and I have a good relationship, as you can tell. Good question. I just introduced a resolution for unused city or county property, buildings, empty warehouses, what have you, for homeless. Even schools, the school that closed down, we're looking to see if we can house our homeless there. Very good question. And again, it seems like I'm bashing government, and I represent government. It's a lot of red tape, and it takes a little bit of time, but I'm with Laura. Let's get to it right now. In fact, we should have got to it yesterday. Regarding successful programs on homelessness, there are a number of models that have been proven successful. The difference with us in the administration, they don't want to go to safe zones because they don't want it to become a tent city like Ala Park was 20 years ago. I can understand that. But there are programs on the mainland that are proven successful where you have farming. So I'm not saying aluminum farms or anything, but just say you have a farm and you have workers. You can get many of the homeless. You can help to train them. You can house them there, feed them there, and it'll be a benefit, mutual benefit for the farming industry, agriculture, and for our homeless. There are successful models. The problem, Laura, is that, again, this is like the Titanic. It slows down. It takes a long time to slow down. It takes a long time to pick up speed. And I'm with you. I'd like to get to the answer today, not 10 years from now. But there are some successful models that we can use. The thing is that the red tape we run into are two chambers, the Senate and the House, and the administration. And if you have all three on board, then it's a lot faster, and it's not always that way. But that's why it's great when we invite the administration, Mark Alexander, when we have the chair of the Human Services Committee, Senator Chen Lopen, here like she was earlier today, and myself, because at least we can focus on what's a priority for homelessness and how we can move it out as fast as we can. So, good question. Thanks.
I can't help but laugh a little bit about revenue enhancing. And if they want to get revenue from gambling, why not get it from prostitution? Think of all the taxes. And what about gambling? What about drugs? Drugs should be legalized. And then think of what a cash cow with our marijuana crop we have here. Just a little levity at this point.
You could replace some of those GMO corn crops. Did anybody want to answer that, or just we go on to the next question?
So I'm not saying we should tax medical use of marijuana, but say that the legislature needs a carrot. One of the proposals on dispensaries for marijuana, the estimate on a marijuana tax on patients would be $20 million in 1 year. So the idea of legalizing marijuana has been more popular. About 50% of the population nationally supports legalization, and that scenario says that we should also tax and regulate marijuana like alcohol and get some tax revenue there.
Jeannie, I'm fine with that. You know me, I've been a staunch supporter of that. The key would be focus on Senator Green and Representative Yamani. Those are your health chairs. If you can get to them, you have a great chance of possibly moving something out. I know it was tough this last session. I saw you there at the conferences, and sorry we couldn't move it out. But if you want to tax, if you want to generate revenue and tax medical cannabis and raise perhaps $20 million, focus on those two health chairs, and you'd have a much better chance. They have a lot of power. Whoever this chair is with the oversight on that subject matter, they have probably 85% of the power to move it through, not to put them on the spot.
We need to start voting.
Can we take more questions while they do that, or should we just vote? Do this. All right. We need your votes. Remember, two items on the little recyclable piece of paper. Yep, that's it. I want to thank everybody for participating and for giving us your direction. And we will see you, I hope, next month for our exciting meeting. Make sure you're getting our newsletter or looking at our website.